button. Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to our first meeting of 2019. I'm going to get us started. I'm Ellen Schmidt, and I'm the vice chair presiding in Joe's absence. Joe cannot be here tonight. I'm sure he wishes that he could, but I'll get the meeting called to order. It's 5:04 p.m. I think what I'd like to do is start with the pledge, and then we'll go around the room and introduce ourselves just for the purpose of so many of us being new and also for the recording, and then we'll get started with our training. So if you would join me in the pledge. Ready?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ellen, if you don't mind, if I could make a quick announcement to everyone, since most everyone is new. We ask that you speak into the microphone when you're introducing yourselves and speaking. The sound system in here will only pick up the voices that are actually transmitted through the microphone. So we appreciate your cooperation in that. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a good reminder for all of us. So I introduce myself. I'm Ellen Schmidt, and I'm going to tell you something I'm excited about in 2019. But I didn't prepare. So I learned so much last year serving on the Ethics Commission that I think what I'm excited about is having the opportunity to serve as vice chair and learn even more. So I'm looking forward to, especially since we're starting with training today, a year of learning.
My name is Darcy Gowner, and am I supposed to say
tell me something you're excited about?
Excited about in 2019? I guess it would be a little obvious to say I'm excited about serving on the Ethics Commission, but I am very excited about serving on the Ethics Commission.
I'm Imani Boykin. I am excited about serving on the Ethics Commission and growth in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Personal, professional growth.
Wonderful.
George Candler, and I'm excited about serving with all these excited people on the Ethics Commission.
Yay!
Hello, my name is LaTanya Smith. I am excited about change. I think big changes, personally and professionally, are on the horizon.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to serving with all of you. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves as well for the purpose of the recording and so we all know?
So I'm Cherry Pollack, Office of General Counsel. And you want me to tell you my excitement?
I do.
Okay. So, well, first of all, I'm excited for the new year, 2019. And I'm excited for my upcoming trip to, my husband and I are leaving Friday. Well, actually, technically Sunday night. Mm-hmm. For Sydney and Melbourne, Australia.
Oh.
So we're really, really excited about
really
that.
Really excited.
Hi, I'm Carla Miller, and I'm excited to see all these new faces here. Very excited.
Hi, I'm Kirby Oberdorfer. I'm the Deputy Director of the Ethics Office, and Dr. Candler and Carla stole my thunder, but I am truly excited to work with all these new and fresh and exciting ideas that you're going to bring to the commission. It's been quite some time since we've had such a great, robust group of new people, and I know it's going to be great things. So I'm excited about the great things each of you will bring to the commission this year.
And I'd like to introduce Steve Casada, who is this tech mastermind from City Council. He's in charge of City Council's tech issues, like over when they broadcast all the City Council meetings. He's behind the scenes making sure it all works. And he was on his way home, and we pulled him back and said, could you do something? And he will have this up and running shortly, but we're just going to continue on with the meeting.
Can we introduce Andrew?
Yes, yes, we're doing that. Go ahead.
I'm Andrea Myers. I'm the training coordinator. I've been with the office since April, and oh my gosh, I I'm excited about everything. Actually, I'm really excited about getting the DEO group a little more jazzed up and energized and taking the ethics program, making it more vibrant in all of the departments citywide. So it'll be fun. It's a fun group.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Do we have Lourdes?
Yes. And, well, yeah. And Lourdes is one of the most efficient people I have ever had the pleasure of working with. And so she'll be the one contacting you about meetings and getting things organized for you. And she is really great. So, I mean, we've added two new people to the ethics office this year, Andrea and Lourdes, and it has really helped expand the office from in 2007 when we started with one part-time person, me, and now to have a group is very exciting. So it looks like our PowerPoint is coming up.
Excellent.
And yes, okay, if you could put it up in page one.
In, if you haven't already, will you flip your name badges around?
Cool, yeah. Kirby?
Perfect. And any members of the public, but since it's a training meeting, we wouldn't be calling for public comments later anyway. So I think I'm putting it all in Kirby and Carla's hands now. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen.
You're welcome.
I'd like to start by offering some brief remarks about Carla. Obviously, Carla is somebody who needs no introduction, but I thought I'd briefly share with you some of her amazing accomplishments throughout her illustrious and trend-setting career that has spanned 40 years. I do so in the hopes of providing context and providing some illumination to your work and service on the Ethics Commission. Carla is an internationally renowned expert in local government ethics and has provided advice and training to localities throughout the United States, South America, Greece, Iraq, Turkey, China, Australia, and Africa. Last summer, she consulted with the European Union to provide intensive anti-corruption training to local mayors in Greece. She has worked in Jacksonville in the areas of criminal justice and ethics for over 40 years. Carla is a Gator and a Seminole, having earned her BA degree in criminology from FSU and her law degree from the University of Florida. Carla has earned two important distinctions in city government. One, she served as the city's first ethics officer for 8 years, beginning in 1999 on a voluntary basis. And two, she currently serves as the first director of the Independent Ethics Office. The Independent Ethics Office resulted from Carla's extraordinary vision and effort in working with counsel to create and develop the office. Although her position is classified as part-time, Carla often has worked so tirelessly, often expending numerous hours in excess of a full-time position, to establish and nurture an ethical culture in city government by implementing numerous national best practices. Some interesting highlights from Carla's distinguished professional service include: in 1974, she served as the city's crime prevention officer working with the sheriff's office. There, she began the state attorney's citizen dispute program. In 1980, she served as an assistant United States attorney for the Middle District of Florida, prosecuting public officials and corruption cases. She actually convicted Dan Scarborough, who I believe was the Senate president at the time, and others of bribery and some other white-collar offenses, and as she will likely explain later in detail, this led to her passion of her lifelong work in ethics. In 1996, she helped the new mayor, John Delaney, and the OGC draft the city's first ethics code, and she served as chair of the Ethics Commission when the code was passed by council. From 2008 to 2011, that's where our connection began, Carla fought for and won the creation of an independent ethics office by persuading council to pass all the enabling legislation unanimously. And I will say, without hesitation, that was no small feat. Post-2011, to the current time, Carla drafted the citizen referendum and Part 3 of the Ethics Code, which established an independent office of inspector general. The citizens referendum passed in March 2015 with a greater than 60% of the vote. In 2015, Carla also completed a two-year fellowship at the Center the Ethics Center at Harvard. Additionally, Carla founded and serves as the president of City Ethics, a nonprofit organization providing information to local governments across the world on starting and improving ethics programs. I personally have worked with Carla for over a decade since my service on the Ethics Commission began in 2007, and I served from 2007 and 2009. I can honestly say with much joy and gratitude that my service on the commission was the very most rewarding professional service I've ever been privileged to experience. And a great part of that was Carla. Carla continues to inspire me with her knowledge and expertise of ethics and her passion for her life's work. She has enriched my life and the lives of countless others through her selfless and dedicated service. She is the crown jewel of our city government, and Jacksonville is incredibly blessed and fortunate to have reaped the fruit of her work. This is perhaps best exhibited by the respect and deference given to her by city officials, which is drastically different than what she experienced when she was first hired as the city's ethics officer back in 2007 and when I served on the Ethics Commission.
I'm going to cry, really. Kirby has been a most unbelievable Ethics Commission member. Behavioral ethics, which is a very new topic, fascinating on why people really do what they do. Government ethics, the danger areas that could get you in trouble. That's always a very important one to know. Sunshine law, ethics law, state and local ethics commission goals and procedures. Yeah, all there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff. So, and I have been working 40 years in this area. I started at a very young age.
That's right.
And what I don't like in any kind of training ever is to feel like a bunch of information is being dumped on me, and you know, oh my God, you're reeling, your head's reeling. So I have to figure out, like, what do you need to know? So you've got a lot of resources that you've already been given. Do you all have your notebooks, that your orientation notebooks and your checklist? Have you been working on your checklist? Mm-hmm. That's going to give you most of the things that you need to know. No point in me having a PowerPoint and reading it to you. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all like way too sophisticated and professional to do that. So that's going to be very helpful. That also has in it the complaint rules, like what we do when a complaint comes in. But that's best to actually see when a complaint comes in. You know, if you read that from front to back, all 20 pages or so, it's, you know, it doesn't make as much sense. When we get our first complaint in, you'll see how it works. And we have operating rules. Now, you've also been given, Alan, could you look up your little book? That's what we give everybody in the city who's appointed to a board. And this has, used to be people get on boards for the city, you know, like the Planning Commission and Arts and Private Places, and you know, they get on these boards and there'd be no training. What, are you born with information on the Sunshine Law? Are you kidding me? You know, so this booklet also has in a lot of materials that you can flip through pretty quickly, but the one that is most important in there is we've taken all the Sunshine Law, just pages and pages of legalese, and put it into two pages in a simplified format, ethics, Sunshine Law in a nutshell. And read that over, because that'll give you some of the, every time someone does something that gets on the front page of the paper for Sunshine Law, it goes in that Sunshine nutshell. So if you just don't do all of those things, we'll be good. You can still think of new things, but you know, those are the main things. And there's a national manual on the City Ethics website on everything you ever wanted to know as an Ethics Commission member. Do not look at that yet. You will be overwhelmed. All right, so the plan for tonight, of all the things that we talked about, main danger areas, the things that can mess you up like right away, let's talk about those main danger areas, and then I want to give you the big picture.
I'll do a little snippet, 5 minutes, 8 minutes, get, you know, like the rest of this in tiny little chunks for you. But I'll tell you the things that you have to know today. Danger areas. Number one danger area, sunshine law. Pretty much with the sunshine law. But I just want to tell you that coming on a board, thank you, because Florida puts the highest responsibility on elected and appointed officials in the world. In the world. And here you are. Come in. Can you believe that we used to not have any training for boards? And then, you know, they'd make a mistake on the sunshine law when, you know, the press would say, oh, you know, you're a bad person, you know. I didn't know. And even our city council people, remember in 2015, there was a big flap about text messaging. You know, they call it a text gate. Really? You know, and so you have the city council members here, they're pretty new. And a lobbyist is texting in, hey, vote for bill number 52. That is not a violation of the sunshine law. But they're looking at it thinking, okay, got a message, what do I do? Nothing. You don't say, well, what are all the other council people thinking? You know, you don't do that. But, I mean, people really struggle with it. Our elected officials struggle with it. It is not easy to apply. So the standards, I mean, I was up in Washington, and they were in the District of Columbia Council, and they were coming up with some new ethics laws. And so we were talking about it and having a seminar on it, and they said, okay, we'd like all the press and all the people to get out of the room now. We're going to have a closed session. And I went, oh, can't do that in Florida. Can't do that in Florida. So we have such high standards, and they all apply to you. They apply to you coming straight in on a board. So here's what you need to know. All meetings are open and accessible to the public. Anybody from the public can walk in. We've noticed this meeting. It's up on the city calendar. Every meeting is open, and it has to be accessible. We have to have wheelchair access and make sure that we're prepared. If someone that spoke Russian, was blind, and in a wheelchair, called us the day before this meeting and said, I want accommodations, we would have a Russian interpreter here, the materials in Braille, Russian, and we would make sure that the room was prepared for them to sit with the wheelchair. I mean, so we have to be very conscious of being accessible. So your meetings are open, and then you have advanced notice of meetings. This does not mean like the day before. Usually we get an agreement on everybody on what days you want to be here, but we notice it about at least 7 days ahead of time. If it's an emergency, and we've had emergencies where we've had to act fast, state laws, 24 hours, but it better be an emergency. So you have to have this advance notice so that people know, and you put it up on a website so they can know that the meeting's happening. And then written minutes are taken, and Lourdes does excellent written minutes. You don't have to worry about that, but minutes are taken. If you ever met and our staff wasn't there, which is unlikely, but minutes have to be taken. Okay, so that is basically the sunshine law. Open your doors. Everybody can come and participate. There is, between all of you Ethics Commission members, no other talking, emailing, phone calls on any issues that could conceivably in your mind come in front of the Ethics Commission. Nothing. Nada. So, sounds easy. So, what would you do? Take a look at this. If you have an article on ethics that you came across, you're reading the paper, you come across this great article, and you want to share it with everyone on the commission, what would you do? Yeah.
I might send it to you and Kirby and see if you think it's worthy of being shared.
Yeah. Good. You can send it to us. Anything that you want to get out to the other members, send to us, and then we'll figure out the appropriate way of getting it out. You would never say, blast it to all the other people in the Ethics Commission. There's no emails between you. You see each other at Publix or at a Jaguars game or something, you can be friendly and say hello and ask about your kids, but you don't go into any issues that could, in anybody's wild imagination, come in front of you. So you have to keep it really tight. What if you have the flu and can't attend a meeting?
Come anyway.
What did you say, Mike?
You can call.
Yeah, you can call in. You can call in. And you get an email from a citizen on your personal email about Ethics Commission business. Your neighbor knows you're on the Ethics Commission. And so they said, you know, this issue has come up in the paper, and I'd like to tell you what I think about it. And they sent it to your personal email. What do you think?
Well, you don't respond to them. I'd probably call you all to get your opinion on what I should do with it.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, when in doubt, call us, you know, because we're always available. I can be reached at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. I always am compulsively looking at my text messages and emails. This is bad. I know that should have been my New Year's resolution. But I didn't make that. So anyhow, you text, you ask. But what happens is everything that you get connected to business is a public record. So you have to save it on your text. Someone texts you on your personal phone. You're thinking, this is my personal phone. This is my neighbor who texted me about the kids playing and a party and also an ethics matter that she read about. Well, the thing about the party and your, you know, what's going on with your neighbors, that's not a public record. But any mention of the Ethics Commission is. So what do? You're stuck with this text and email. If your computer crashes, you know, you've destroyed a public record. That is a criminal violation. You don't want to be destroying public records.
Can't they just
forward
the email to
you? That is the answer. You forward it, and our computers back everything up. But don't you be the only one holding on to it, because then you're stuck with it. So sunshine is gavel to gavel. A lot of times, city council people do this. I've seen it in every meeting. You know, like you're coming in, the meeting has been noticed to start at 5 o'clock. So you're coming in saying, are you going to bring up that issue about the text messaging that was to city council? And you're talking as you're coming in, because the meeting's been noticed after all. No, it's from the meeting being called to order and the meeting being adjourned. As you're leaving, you don't say, I don't know why you voted that way. Really, I would have taken another position. No, you're still talking about it as you're leaving. So it's gavel to gavel, and it sort of like seeps out a little bit. So I always have to go and say, stop talking about this. Liaison. Okay, you can't use other people to defeat the Sunshine Law. Like, you can't go to Kirby and say, Kirby, do you know, like, Imani goes to Kirby and says, do you know what Ellen thinks about this issue? Could you poll the members and see if anybody else is interested in this issue? No, you can't use other people to kind of do your work. And I think sometimes, my feeling is that maybe lobbyists sometimes do that. Like, they'll go in and they'll say, you know, I've got this issue and I've been talking to the other council members. And it looks like it's really, even without your vote, we're going to win. I mean, you're vote counting. And someone's telling you that other people on the council are voting a certain way. So you can't, like, we've had front page headlines on that. Front page headlines like, JEA walks in and they're talking about giving the evaluating the director and giving him a raise. They all walk in. I move to give the director a $40,000 bonus. I second the motion. All in favor? Aye. Yeah, really? No discussion? And they have had an attorney go to each person and discuss it, and then they all came with consensus. You know, building the consensus without any discussion or any, you know, robs the people of their ability to see your thinking process. Everybody cool with that? Yeah. Phone meetings, no phone meetings, no Skype meetings, which is sad because, you know, like in business, we're used to being able to do that. Conference calls, no. Now, if you're sick, you can call in so we don't get your germs. And we have phones. In fact, Joe Rogan, our chair, is up in Atlanta taking some depositions today, and he was going to call in, and he said, but I'm going to have to end my deposition early. And I said, don't do that. Just do your deposition, and we'll let you, you know, you can listen to the tape afterwards. But he could have called in for the meeting. But he cannot be counted for the quorum. And since there's 9 members, 5 is a quorum. And if you only have 4 sitting in here and the 5th one calling in, they don't count for the quorum. So issue that where this came up is I said, Ellen has volunteered to be vice chair and Joe chair. And please let me know if anybody else wants to run for office. Send that out. So someone responds back, oh, I really like Ellen and Joe. That's a great idea. And they make a great big, and reply to all. That's considered a communication between everybody. You know, really. Or if, how about you do this in regular meetings too? You know, like you want to write a letter on behalf of the Ethics Commission. And you all kind of vote on what you want to say in the letter. But you say, okay, Ellen, why don't you draft it after the fact? You know what we want to say, the five things. You draft it and then send it out to all of us to do a final review. Violates the Sunshine Law. You know, so some of these business things that you ordinarily do to save time and be efficient, you can't do. So those are the things that we've come across. And let's see. So how do you know if you're violating the Sunshine Law? Okay, here's your clue. You know how when you go to meetings, especially business meetings, and you want to be prepared, so you call up people and you say, okay, I have all the materials. I'm thinking of bringing up this issue. Do you think that's an issue that the group is going to like, or are they going to be interested in it? And you prepare and you talk to people. And you get there, and you know you're not going to look like an idiot because you already have, like, your friends are going to vote for it, and you kind of have an idea that it's a good idea. How you know you are violating the Sunshine Law is if you walk in and you're really comfortable and you know what the other people are thinking. If you come in and you're completely clueless and you have no idea if they're going to like your idea or laugh at you, that's good. Because that means that you have not talked to anybody and you haven't gotten any thumbs up or you haven't gotten any clues. You're clueless, okay? So you have to bring these. Now you can call Kirby and myself and Cherry. You know, you can say, is this a good idea? And we'll say, no, we've brought that up three times and it's a loser. Or, yeah, that's a great idea. You know, we can tell you that kind of stuff. But if you get any clues from anybody else, if we say, yeah, you know what, we brought that up last year, and George and Ellen and Joe hated the idea, so I don't think really, you know, then we're starting to build a consensus by telling you what the other people are thinking. Okay. Public records, every document, everything you're writing, everything in connection with the Ethics Commission is now a public record. So you get a notebook for every meeting, and you write in your notebook, and you can do whatever you want. It's a public record. Mm-hmm. Lourdes will collect them. You can take them home with you if you want to, you know, work and use it. But basically, when you leave the Ethics Commission one day, years from now, when you leave, we'll take that notebook and we'll preserve all those public records. So you don't have to worry that you've stored them in the garage and your garage got flooded after a hurricane and now you've destroyed public records. Keep them in your notebook. Everything you write, if an issue is coming up and you're writing, God, what an idiot speaker. You know, they're a moron. That's a public record. You know, now if the press is all out there and we're in the middle of a hot issue, if you are texting, you're going to be asked for all your text messages. If you are passing little notes, don't do that. If you're writing copious notes, you're going to be asked for your notes. You know, so be careful. Yeah.
Can you comment on note-taking during a shade meeting?
It's public records when the case becomes open.
Which is what, upon resolution?
No, with cases like with an elected official, we had four complaints against elected officials last year. Comes in, we say nothing. We investigate, we have determination of legal sufficiency. We go through certain stages. Where it becomes public is a probable cause determination. If we make a determination like, yeah, there's something here, at that point, all of the records become public. And that protects people from like a crazy accusation. And then it's front page of the paper, and they don't even get a chance to defend themselves. So it's at the probable cause stage it becomes public.
Or dismissal.
Or dismissal. Yeah. Or an agreement. And most cases, tooth and nail, they go, okay, I know I did it, you know, typically. So personal laptop, your personal phone, anything where you type in something related to ethics is a public record. So back it up, send it to us, or don't create it to begin with is a smart thing to do. Okay, regardless of what form it comes in, cave drawing, smokes in, text message, YouTube, Facebook. If it concerns public business, it's a public record. Okay, got it. Don't throw anything out. Just give it to Kirby and I, and we won't hold on to it. Scan it. Okay, public comment. This is an interesting topic since we have no public here, so I'll tell you about public comment. Here's the law. The law is that before an issue is determined, the public has the right to comment on it. So, like over in City Council, they'll introduce a bunch of bills, and they put them all like on their agenda, and the public has the right to say, I don't like this bill, I do like this bill, you know, they have the right to comment. What happens then is the bill goes through City Council, and maybe 2 months later it gets voted on, and it could have been changed in that time period. And they don't have the right to comment on it every single meeting, every, you know, right before. So with the Ethics Commission, what we do is if there's an important issue, we look out and we say, is there anyone here in the public that wants to comment on this issue before we take a vote? On this issue, not on life in general or other gripes you have, but on this issue, you have something to say. And we have some regulars that come to the meeting, and so they'll comment. You know, and then we vote on the issue. At the end of the meeting, we typically allow additional public comment. That's not required by Florida law, but we allow it. So does the City Council. You can comment on life and every issue that you can possibly think of at that time. It is a right that they, before anything important, like let's say we had a lot of legislation that we worked on last year, and before we sent it to City Council, we gave people a final chance. Like, does the public have anything to say about this? I don't like it, I like it, whatever, you know, but we listen to the public. It is a right under Florida law.
In college, yeah. Add this, it would also apply in the subcommittee meetings as well, since some of the members will be chair of these committee meetings, and they have to let the public speak, so.
Right, and it is limited. You can limit it as chair to 1 minute. If you have a lot of people, you can limit it to 1 minute. You know, and people have the right to do that. And also contact. They can always send emails to the commission. They can ask to meet with people in the commission. Yes, so they have a lot of ways to interact with us. Okay, last one. These are the danger areas.
I'm sorry. If we get an email from someone that says, can I meet with you, should we refer them to you?
I
don't want to meet with anybody if I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you would call us. That's never happened. I would imagine that gets into touchy areas because I would say, let me get with the director of the program and check on our procedure for it. We've never had anyone want to do that. What they'll want to do is talk to you as you're leaving the meeting. What do you think of it? And then, you know, I mean, they're a citizen. They want to talk to you. But you can't give your opinion, really. Because we don't have individual opinions. We have no individual opinions. We have the opinion of the Ethics Commission that you decide upon and you vote upon and your chair speaks for you. Because I can tell you why we do this, because 20 years ago, well, we didn't have that rule, and we were writing the Ethics Code, the press was sitting there the whole time, and they picked people apart as we left, and they said, well, what do you think of? Don't you think we should do blah, blah? And the person would say, yes, I think we should. And then the other person would say, no, I think it's a small idea. And then the story would come out, you know, Ethics Commission in great disagreement about everything. Oh, no. We can't have everybody randomly talking to the press. Or even citizens will say, well, I talked to Imani, and she said, you know, what do you mean, Darcy? You can't vote that way because you told me at the end of the last meeting. So do that at your own risk here. I'm just telling you in advance to say, you know what, that's an interesting issue you bring up, and we're going to discuss it at the next meeting. sure the commission's going to come up with a good plan for that, but do not get sucked into it. And the press are tricky on this. So the press rule was learned. You know, all these rules are learned the really hard way.
Warning labels on products.
To the press, the chair speaks for the group. What do you say if the press comes up to you and asks for a comment? Okay, what do you think? I'm from the Times Union, and
I'm so used to this.
Or you can ask the chair.
Yeah. You can ask the chair. It's fine.
The rule.
There was the little thing in there that told us what to say, right?
Yeah.
That's what I would
say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can always refer it to me. In a bind where you panic and you go blank, just say ask the chair. You know, that's your default. That's out or Kirby. You know, or chair. You know, like the three of us have seen these things and we'll protect you. Blurting something out is never a good idea, just generally in life. But
Carla, yeah. So I have seen as well where you could be in a public meeting and you're quoted in the paper just because of your statement that you're in the meeting. So that can occur as well.
Or you could be misquoted.
Oh, yes. You could be misquoted.
As happened to Joe. Yeah, that happened to Joe. Yes.
Yeah, that was at the legislative committee.
Yes.
There was a lot of press there. So.
There was, yes. And he was misquoted.
I know that this is sort of like a non sequitur, but I wanted to tell everybody you might have seen Darcy on the front page of the local news with her client, who was a former city council person who was indicted. And she asked to be removed from the case, and she was. And I just wanted to let everyone on the Ethics Commission know, because it talks about Darcy being on the Ethics Commission in that article, that when Darcy was appointed by the state attorney, we knew she was representing this former elected official. And so we got a state ethics commission opinion for her, just for her back pocket in case she ever needed it. And here, Darcy, you're covered. It's unfortunate when the press only gets two or three little pieces of information and they kind of create a story here. Was covered by state ethics commission opinions or bar rules. You know, so I just want to let you know, since you were all avid readers of the Times Union, and I wanted Darcy to say I'm sorry that, you know, you never want to wake up and see your picture in the paper, but, you know, I think it will all work out very soon for you. And I just want to let everyone know the state ethics commission has backed her up. Those are the rules that will get you in trouble, sunshine law and public records. Now let's talk about the big picture here. Big picture, okay? Because what's the point of learning all these little rules? I mean, who wants to be like full of rules? You know, I wanted you to know the things that get you on front page of paper. That is not why you're here. I mean, it's certainly not why I'm here. So I wanted to just talk about some of the big picture items. And it is more like, instead of like all the legal stuff, we can certainly do a lot of legal stuffing, can't we, Ellen? I mean, yes. But we have to have a heart doing it, and we have to know why we're doing it, because we have a very important function, and if we don't feel it from our heart, then we're not going to be able to get it done, because it's hard. And when Kirby and I were working on getting the independence of the Ethics Commission, and I was told in the beginning by someone from OGC, who's a friend, that I had a snowball's chance in Florida of getting the Ethics Commission independent, because the elected officials would hate the idea and they'd never do it. And we went to the Charter Revision Commission. Kirby was there. She's pregnant. And she came and she looked so like she was going to have a baby any day. she made the meeting, and the whole Ethics Commission sat there, all mine. And the Charter Revision Commission, which was a volunteer group that meets every 10 years, basically, I would say, would you say insult, cross-examine?
Yeah, that's mild. interrogate would be a little more strongly than that. It was
ugly.
It was very caustic.
Caustic, yeah. It was, and chair, and we had prepared everything, and they looked like, are you kidding me, an independent ethics commission? You know, go ahead. Get out of here. Mm-hmm. And we all left with our tail between our legs, and I thought, this is never going to happen. And
how about sunshine? Funny how they all had the same position without ever hearing from us.
Yeah, I know, that was strange. But, you know, we left, and then the next day, the Times Union had this huge editorial on the need for an independent ethics commission. I thought, they didn't give up. Okay, we'll get back in the game. And 1 year afterwards, the city council unanimously voted for the independent ethics commission. But I can tell you that if we hadn't had the heart to do that, if it was just like, oh, I'm just on the commission, and I just, you know, do this for, you know, no particular purpose. If we hadn't had the heart in that to get through the insults and the pushback and the aggravation, because we wanted it more than anything else, and that's what got us through. So these issues have to have heart in them. If you don't have that, there's no point in doing any of this. So, the Jacksonville program. Why are we here? What is our purpose? So, a little bit on the history. This is Senator Scarborough. I sent him to prison. I actually was flipping through a paper and I saw his obituary. It freaked me out. You know, it's like, oh God, I know that man. Former state senator, was champion for employees, but a fraud and extortion conviction marred his 14 years of service. Once Florida's most powerful senator until his career ended with his 1982 conviction.
That's been very timely.
It doesn't make it clear. It says Wednesday.
That would have been very timely.
You know what? I sat in a federal courtroom with him on the other side for 6 weeks, a 6 week trial. And, you know, you get to like them. They have your coffee with them in the morning and everything. I felt so badly. And here's the thing. Back then, and really up until the year 2000, we would throw people into office and say, good luck on the Sunshine Law and all these other criminal laws and people approaching you and lobbyists. Hope you're an ethical person. Hope you can figure this out. And I looked at them and I thought, really? We throw people into that arena and give them no training at all? And so Florida, when we passed our ethics code, we were the first city in the state of Florida to require our elected officials to have training. Mm-hmm. It's only fair. I mean, really. So anyhow, that kind of got me inspired. Like, why is it he looked like a nice person? He played football for the Gators. Yeah,
and they're all upstanding citizens.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he seemed friendly enough. And then the former mayor was indicted and the former chairman of the Democratic Party, they were all convicted. But they seemed like people that I would have gone to law school with, I would have hung out with. What were they, just evil people waiting to commit crimes? Or what led them to that? What led them to that? And is there anything you could do at the beginning to prevent that from happening was the question I had. So 1965, massive corruption in this city. There's a whole book on it. On like 15 different elected officials got indicted. We had so many people getting indicted, you can't even keep track of them. I mean, there was that many in the book on consolidation. What's the name of that book?
Quiet Revolution.
Quiet Revolution talks about all the people
Great
that
book.
Were indicted. That led to our city county being consolidated in 1968. The reason was corruption. Then we had not too long after that massive corruption in the federal cases that I handled when I was in the U.S. Attorney's Office. And we would laugh that we needed a bus to come over to City Hall to get all of our witnesses because we had so many witnesses over here. And everybody, like the FBI had this big chart, and everybody was connected to everybody else, and every payoffs going all over the place, and we had 14 different cases going on. And several people in trials and indictments. And that was my introduction to practicing law. I went, wow, this is unbelievable. 1985, the general counsel of our city was indicted, Dawson McQuaig, and went to prison, along with some land developers. And, you know, so we had that going on. 1989, John Delaney was an assistant state attorney, and he had a grand jury talking about corruption in the city and what is going on. We can't seem to get out of it. And the presentment that came out of that with John Delaney called for an ethics commission. council at the time, and Matt Carlucci sponsored the first bill for an ethics commission in 1992. But then they sat around, you know, saying, what do we do? What do we do? And there was no ethics code. There's no ethics code. And so they started W.C. Gentry, another legal legend in town. You know, he was the first chair, and he put together trying to get all the laws together that governed people. Because you can come in as an elected official, there's federal laws, state laws, and local laws, and they're not in one place. It's just like, good luck. You're not a lawyer. You just got elected to council. Good luck. So the effort was to try to pull us all together. So let's see. First ethics officers for the city. I was the first paid ethics officer part-time in 2007. Mm-hmm. I volunteered for about 8 years prior to that. Ethics office made independent. I was up and running in 2012, not too long ago. Inspector General office started 2014. We now have an Inspector General office of 9 people. Our office has 4 people, and that stems from a volunteer effort around the year 2000. You know, so now we actually have a critical group here that can get something done.
Who runs that department?
The IG's office.
Inspector General is Lisa Green. Yep, and she'll come over and talk to you guys probably in the next month or two. Okay, so this is some of the headlines, like Jacksonville ethics reforms move forward. Progress historic, you know, when all the ethics reforms came through. City moves to new era of ethics. So that's nice. We got the law changed, so we're independent. And then there was like sort of a sigh of relief for a couple of years. Everyone was just happy. We were kind of we rested, you know. We were sitting. And then we had someone file a complaint against the mayor, you know, and that like kicked things into gear again. So I would tell you that the Ethics Commission has ebbs and flows, like huge action where we're like sweating blood to get something done, quiet, relaxing. Huge action. Someone files a complaint against 3 elected officials at the same time. Then it gets a little quieter. So don't feel like every month you have to have crazy, like, tons of things going on. It kind of has a flow to it. So what kind of ethics program do we want to have in Jacksonville? 3 kinds of programs. There are only 3 kinds of programs, and here they are. Oops, this is not moving. You want to just do them?
Sure.
Okay. It's my 3-dog theory of ethics. Okay, so the first type of ethics program.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
All right.
Think. Maybe. Oh, here we go. Yeah.
Did you do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's the first kind, the lapdog program. Okay, and I would say that a lot of ethics programs are lapdog programs. They're cute. You know, bark a little bit, you know. Everybody says, here we have an ethics program, and they, you know. So this is one lapdog program. Our values, respect, integrity, excellence. You know, that's the ethics. That's a collector's item. I got that for Christmas 1 year from my husband. That's the kind of Christmas present I get. It is a collector's item. It's Enron's ethics code.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I should have brought the real one in. I fuck it up. It's a joke. That's a lapdog. That's like a lapdog program here, you know, where you say you have one, and they spent millions on laminating cards. I told anyone, if I ever laminate cards, a shoot. You know, but anyhow. That is the example of what we don't want to have, an ethics program in name only. Next, because the culture is always going to overrule. You got the ethics program over here, but everyone's doing something else over here. The culture is different. So the next is the attack dog. Now, usually when ethics programs come in, everyone's, oh my God, you know, they're on a witch hunt, it's an attack program. Oh my God, look what the ethics commission is doing. So we get pushed into being attack dogs. I don't want to be a lap dog, but I don't want to be an attack dog either. You know, we never, never want to have that edge, and you see it all over the country in ethics commissions. They get this edge where, you know, they have pleasure in like, you know, people going down. Really not good, you know, and we have to, everything we say is analyzed because there's already this thing up there out to get me. That's, you know, so you do not want to have that kind of program. The gotcha system. You'll hear elected officials talk about, oh, yeah, it's the gotcha system. You have complicated rules, and all you're doing is trying to trap us. Trap us. Gotcha. Which, you know, which one? No. What we we want is the watchdog. That's the third kind. That's what we want. We want to be around. We want to be herding the group in, you know, like making sure everything is, you know, going smoothly, but with a lot of kindness and compassion. And that that is the type of vision that I have for our program. The Jacksonville Ethics Program, just want to go over so you know what kind of elements we have here. This is a famous story, the blind man and the elephant. Do you guys all know that story? Oh, okay.
Don't tell me.
Okay, here's the story. It's like 600 years old, and elephant that comes into this Indian village, and everybody's talking about the elephant. They've never seen one, and they're fascinated with the elephant. Kids are running around screaming. Five blind men. So they want to get in on the excitement, so they all approach the elephant, and they're feeling the elephant to see what it's like. And one says, "Oh, well, you know, I'm feeling its ear. It's I know what it's like. It's like a fan." And someone felt the tusks. "I know what an elephant's like. It's just like a spear. That's what it is." And so they each approach the elephant from a different direction, and they think they know all about it because they have one element. And the more that I talk to different ethics programs and people around the country, they say, "Oh, we have an ethics program. We have one." I say, "Well, what are you doing?" Maybe doing like a piece over here. And then this group would be doing a piece over here. You know, I thought, wait a minute. I like to see all the pieces kind of together. So this is the ethics element. And I'll show you, these are the pieces of programs. And I'm happy to say in Jacksonville, we have all of these pieces operational. We're one of the few cities in the country that does. Los Angeles, New York, Miami have these elements. But for a city of our size, it's unique to have these all in place. First is ethics codes, legal codes, codes of conduct, the foundation. You know, you have to have the rules, the do's and don'ts. Okay, so we've got that. Ethics officer systems are interesting. They're in corporate America, too. ethics, compliance, teaching people, getting the word out, you know, so people know what is expected of them. Inspector General, going around and talking about not necessarily ethics, but fraud and waste and contract issues. Like, are people doing things? They're not committing ethics violations. They're just wasting stuff all over the place. Or they're, you know, misusing resources in some way. So Inspector General is important. Hotlines, whistleblower protection, whole ears. That's like, really, people don't want to report things if you have to, like, sign your name and get it notarized. And the best tips we've gotten in the ethics office have been anonymous ones where people have called in. And we can, you are one of the few ethics commissions in the country at the local level that can take in anonymous complaints. Most city councils do not. They fought that. But you have it, and you can take in an anonymous complaint and say, we are going to file on this or we're not. It's a very powerful thing to have. The State Ethics Commission does not have that power. You do. You do. Internal controls from the council auditor. There's a whole system for cross checks and balances in the city council auditor. And here you are at the top, the Ethics Commission. Volunteer group. Key. You are the in-between with all the citizens in Jacksonville and all city government on ethics and anti-corruption issues. Very important. And grand jury and criminal prosecution, you see where I put this. Strategically placed. And here's the thing. When I was prosecuted, there wasn't anything of the front of this elephant. Nothing. It was just like waiting and hoping that maybe it was going to get you indicted or pulled into the state attorney's office. I mean, there was nothing giving you any advance warning. So now we have a lot of advance warning and mandatory training. So what activities are okay for you to do? Now, Lourdes, yeah, you can pass it out. I have a list of about 8 things. I want you to read it, and with your pencil, I want you to circle the things that you think it's okay for you to do as an ethics commission member. I'll give you just like 2-3 minutes to do it. Just first impulse, don't overthink it. You don't have to hand it in. I'm not grading it. No, I'm not grading it. Sure. individually.
Individually.
Yeah. Well, and like a group. Yeah, like decide cases on ethics. You wouldn't be doing that individually. Look up when you're finished and then we'll So let's talk about these decide cases on ethics law violations. This is obviously your number one function while you're in place to handle complaints that come in. But we don't get tons of those, I can tell you. We don't get like 100 a year or anything. Last year we got the highest number we ever have gotten, and a lot on elected officials. But still, it was under 10. You know, it's not like a huge amount. Yes, you can do number one. Two, train city staff on ethics issues. You think you can do that? Yes, ma'am?
Yes.
Confused because the thing you do is the office, but not necessarily the commission.
Right. It actually is something where you advise and you can kind of coordinate and give us good input on it, but we've got staff now. This was written when we had no staff and we were, the Ethics Commission, actually, we had to do all the training because there wasn't any staff. You know, but now you have, so what it says in the actual code is you advise, you can, so you can, we bring things in, we show you what we're doing, and certainly people like Carlton, you have the corporate experience, you could say, you know, have you thought about doing mid-management training, or have you, you know, so you can give us advice on that, but you don't have to worry about being in charge of training. Public hearings on text messages, yes, no? What do you think?
I haven't seen us hold a public hearing on a topic like that, but it sounds like something we might have an opinion about and write an opinion about after discussion. So I wasn't sure how to answer that.
Okay. Now, what you have to do is hear complaints that come in on a timely basis. What is your creative thing to do if you want to get into it is you can actually make recommendations to the city council on new laws. You can have public hearings. Let's say everyone in the community is talking about how awful it is that council people can text each other during council meetings, or can lobbyists can text. They're outraged, and it's on the front page of the paper. You can have a public hearing on that. You can announce that as a thing that the Ethics Commission wants to look into, and you can discuss it, and you can bring in experts, and you can think with, is there a law that needs to be changed here? Is there something we need to recommend? It's a very powerful thing that you can do in the commission. You can take a look at one of the biggest issues in the country right now, campaign financing. Mm-hmm. Is there something that could be done in that area to prevent some of the abuses that we're seeing nationwide? You can be creative. And so that's where every once in a while we get a great issue in there and you can run with it. Draft changes to local law, yes. Next one, speak to a city council member about an idea for a change in the ethics laws. What do you think about that one?
I put CM, Carlton.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Carlton?
That's, I said
speaking to city council members, it should be you speak on behalf of the commission. The commission's had a meeting, and they said, okay, you know, we've elected Ellen to go talk to three city council members and brief them on this bill. Mm-hmm. Go do it. But we've had members in the past that have just said, yeah, I'm just going to go and start building up a coalition on laws that I'm coming up with. Like, no, we have to, like, have some kind of coordination here of what we're doing. So speaking on your own without authorization of the commission is not a good idea. Answer a call from Times Union Reporter. You know the answer to that. Yes.
Just to talk about how the case is confidential.
Right. Yes, I know. Yeah. That's where they trick you. Mm-hmm. You know, Councilmember so-and-so has been in the news, and we heard that the Ethics Commission is considering that case. We'd like a comment from you. I'm sorry, that case is confidential. You screwed up. Mm-hmm. You screwed up because now you've admitted that there is a case. We don't even admit there is a case. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you say, oh, yes, that case is confidential, oh, you have a case then. You're confirming. Then the headline is, Ethics Commission member confirms that there's a case against council member so-and-so. So don't be tricked. I'm telling you this because I have been tricked.
Oh.
On this area, you know. So when the press comes to you, they are smarter than we are on this stuff. On getting hire a director, yes, hire and fire. Refer a case that comes in on the hotline to the State Ethics Commission. What do you say?
Yeah. It was a state level thing, sure.
Yep, we can refer. We can refer to the state attorney's office. Mm-hmm. If we get an anonymous thing in that's a crime, we can refer to the state attorney's office. Issue a written sanction to a city employee for being extremely rude to a citizen and handling a city matter. What do you think? How many say yes? How many say no?
No.
Now, we get people that call us all the time saying, someone wasn't nice to me. You know, they told me a lie. They did this, they were rude, they were mean, they were. And none of those things are good, but they're not ethics violations. So we don't sanction for anything that's not in the ethics code. The ethics code has 10 things that you can and cannot do. If someone violates that, we sanction them for something they've been given warning on ahead of time. Not just on, we don't like what you did. No. You know, so we don't sanction people for general ethics violations. Send an email to the staff of the Echo office to do research on an issue that you're interested in. How many say yes? I'm going to say no.
No.
No? What do you think, Carlton?
I think you could, but I would be reticent to do so.
Okay. Here's the thing. Let us imagine, like, what we do and what you do. And Kirby and I have given this a lot of thought. And it's like, for so many years, I was like, I'm the person doing this. So I can tend to come in and say, oh, I'll handle your project. You know, like I'll do. It's better for you guys to create. Mm-hmm. And it's like if I imagine it like an artist studio, and you're the artist. And we'll get the room for you. We'll line up the paintbrushes. We'll make sure we clean up afterwards. We'll give you any materials. We'll give you art books. We'll give you whatever you need. But you create. You create. And that thing, if you turn around and say, oh, I'm a little worried about what I'm creating, do you have any? I'll say, here's some resources. Mm-hmm. And if I see you going in the wrong direction, I'll say, here's some resources. But I want it to be your create. You know what I mean? I want to see bright ideas come from you guys. And so, go and do whatever you want to do to create. You may have quiet periods of time with the Ethics Commission, like a couple of months. You might be busy with your real life. And then you get a really good idea and you want to create something that is your legacy for the Ethics Commission. So go create it, and we'll do everything we can to help you. We won't, like, do it for you. Like, okay, I'll do it for you. No. You create. We'll support you in everything that you need. Okay, let's see. Make an appointment with the head of the city's procurement division to get information about the process for city contracts. Yes? How many say yes? How many say no? Yeah? No? You actually can do that, because one of the things that you're in charge of under the charter is to take a look at the ethics in the procurement system. Now, it'd probably be a good idea, like, you could come to me and say, you know, I'm really interested in procurement system is not fair in the way the bidding process is done, and I am really interested. I want to create in that area, and I'd say, great, you know, here's the lay of the land, and here's what you need to know. Go do it. Now, you wouldn't want to just go do that without checking in with me so I can tell you the right people
uh-huh.
and give you the lay of the land. But anything that's in the charter that, like, gets you excited, create. And just come and let me help get you going with it. Ask the supervisor of elections to attend an ethics commission meeting? Yes, of course, you know, and talk about anything about candidates for local elections. So you see, like, sort of the nuances of this. If you want to, like, get going in an area, just run it by Kirby and I, and we will do everything we can to encourage you. If it's something that's totally not allowed, we'll tell you that, too. So you have only the power to do what's in the code and in the charter. If it doesn't say you can do it in there, you can't make it up.
Uh-huh.
I tell you that because I've made that mistake. Over here, like, doing, and everyone, are you crazy? Anyhow, you have to. You can handle complaints. You can review ethics situations and make recommendations. Believe me, if you had a hearing on money in local elections and you brought in some people like the supervisor of elections and people to talk about that, that would be, like, lots of people would be interested in where you're going with that and find out what's going on with the community in that area. That's a huge issue. Anyhow, you have the power to do that. So just briefly to wrap up, there's something that took me a long time to figure out, and maybe you guys already know it. If you do, that's great. I had to spend at least 10 years to figure this out, so I'll tell you that what we get in trouble for is kind of confusing ethics and corruption and laws and putting it all into one bucket. And people come in and they're complaining, this is an awful thing that happened. And it could be a law issue, it could be a corruption issue, or it could be an ethics issue. And if we don't know the differences in these concepts, we get really messed up. It's bad. It's really bad. Or the press come in and say, this is really bad. What are you going to do about it? Well, you have to know what lane we're swimming in here. And so this is, like, number one, ethics. This is people ethics, like pure ethics, goodness and light, and being honest and respectful, honest and respect, fairness. And you're a good person. We don't enforce that with the Ethics Commission. Mm-hmm. We hope everyone's nice, you know, but we do not enforce that. Government ethics is the ethics of the institution. It is not personal ethics. You could be a really good person, and you've all been a really good person in an unethical institution. You know, where everyone around you, you know, the institution is not good, and you feel it in your bones, but you're a good person. So when we talk about government ethics, we're talking about standards that make officials more accountable to the citizens. So no conflicts, transparency, no personal gain. No personal gain is the biggest one in there. You come into public service, and you should walk out, I don't know, worth less than when you came into public service. You're not trying to gain. You're not, like, saying, hey, now that I'm a city council person, you know, I can, like, pull some strings over here and get some benefits. You know what? They're going to hire my spouse. Mm-hmm. If I call them up and they got a bill in front of me, you know, I bet they'll hire my husband in the IT department. Yeah, you know, he actually asked me one time, do you think there's any jobs at the IT department, you know, like several years ago when he first moved from Australia? I said, are you kidding me? I'm going to put in a good word for you. So you can be ethical on a personal level, really good person by giving gifts or getting a job for a friend, but this could violate government ethics standards. So you could be ethical but not ethical from a government standpoint. Corruption. Okay, corruption, next thing. We've got personal corruption, like Rod Blagojevich up in Chicago. Oh, we've got great examples. I mean, I used to have a whole, like, mud shot list of elected officials. Well, listen, we've got some here locally. But I do not want to put any specific names up here, but personal corruption, we know. Institutional corruption is what we have in Jacksonville. Institutional corruption is what you need to be thinking with. It's not a concept I was familiar with. I'll tell you that. Corruption, need to define corruption. Abuse of public power. You're in a position where you have power. You're using it for your private gain that goes against the public interest. It's not always illegal. And was hard for me to understand as a lawyer, because I'm always thinking about corruption, and they violated the law, and they got sent to prison. But there's a lot of corruption that people have figured out that they've worked around, maybe with their lawyers. They've worked around, and they are definitely doing things for their own private interests and their private gain, but it's completely legal. And when I first started seeing things like that, when I came in 2007, they gave me a hotline, and people started calling. And my hair was curling. You know, I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe you're doing that. You know, it would be like someone would call and say, the head of JAA, the airport authority at the time, his wife is getting no big contracts for $1 million. No big contracts. I didn't even know you could do that. I didn't know you could just give out money and contracts to people you liked, you know. She's the only one that can do PR activities for the city. Really? There's a lot of people that can do that. I saw, like, favoritism, you do a favor over here, and then this person gives you a contract over here, and you get a contract for $100,000, and then change orders up to over $3, $4 million, and those people are, like, connected to, you know, it's like if you were part of the, I say war, but if you're part of the group that does favors with everybody, and you don't rock the boat, you will get contracts. You will get the, but that's not a fair way to operate government. Truly, it's not. I mean, it is direct disadvantage to women, minorities, people that don't play that game. There's that type of thing that happens, and it's all legal. So I would get this hotline call, and then I'd go over to general counsel's office. I'd say, this seems awful that all these no big contracts are going to the head. And they say, it's legal. We know about it. It's legal. I go, oh, it can't be right, though. It can't be right. So you'll get the press reporting on things like that. It's not, it just doesn't seem right. And then the lawyer said, it's legal. You know, I'm thinking, oh. You know, so that, correction. Now, in Harvard, I studied institutional corruption for 2 years. And the definition of institutional corruption influences, tit for tat, people helping everyone. You're in the group that helps everyone. Influences that shift priorities, that weaken the organization, weaken public trust, and they're completely legal. You know? So do we have that here in Jacksonville? Yes. And will you see things like that come into this commission? Yes, you will. What do you do? Well, it's not going to be an ethics offense that you can fine someone for. It's not going to be that. Take a look at that issue and see if it's something that you want to discuss and get into, and maybe we do need to have laws in that area or more transparency in that area. So the idea is that as an elected official, you should be pointing north towards the citizens at all times. Influences that shift priorities pull you away from that. You're not thinking 100% of the citizens. You have other fish to fry over here, and it influences your decision making. I have at least 50 examples of that happening here in the city. So fighting institutional corruption is something that you might see, and you need to distinguish that between your actual ethics offenses that you do have power to enforce. So three laws. We've got local ethics laws, Chapter 602. You have those in your book. Local criminal laws, which you guys know about. Sunshine laws, state attorney handles that. State ethics and criminal laws and federal laws. The only one, like this all comes into you and like packaged in clumps. The only one that you have authority over is local ethics laws, Chapter 602. We get the other stuff out. We certainly do not touch crimes. You know, we get that over to the state attorney's office. Weakness of boards. I'm wrapping up with this and the weakness of boards. Not that you would have this, but this is what I've seen of boards that make them ineffective and to your goal. Has anyone heard of the ASH experiment? Yeah, you have? Well, that's good. Okay, so see the figure over here on the left, that line? What line does it match over here, A, B, or C? Darcy, what do you think?
A.
Because
I feel
it
like you're asking
me
to
weigh
in.
Well, because what they did is they get a whole group and they bring in one ringer, and we'll make Kirby the ringer. She comes in, she doesn't know anything about it. And they ask her which one it matches, and she says A, because clearly it's A. And the whole rest of the group says it's B. You know, they're trained to say B. You know, they're trained, they're in on it. So they say B. Kirby's disturbed. Mm. You know, and they keep doing that. And after a while, Kirby looks around, sees what everyone says first, and then she says, oh, yeah, it's B. Mm. And it's B. And so they're the famous ASH conformity studies that for survival purposes were hardwired to look at the group, like sniff it out, and go with the group.
Groupthink.
Groupthink. And sometimes that's good for our survival, you know, if a pack of lions is coming, you know, I mean, you get together with the group. And, but when we're trying to do that in groups like this, and you're looking around like you're new, so you're going to look to Ellen and say, Ellen and George have been on the commission a long time, obviously what they're saying is going to be right. No, you've got, you know, like, you know, well, they could be right.
No, I've been working with them for years.
They could be right. They could be right. But the thing is, like, when you're new, especially when you're new, you're like, oh, you know, or if you're not a lawyer, you know, like, you think, oh, God, the lawyers know, you know, and so they say something and you immediately, like, you're quiet. And so we want to conform. We want to be liked by the group. Now, I want you all to be very likable and, you know, kind of get along with the group here, but I want you to speak up. And if you see something, you know, that you don't agree with or you don't understand, then open mouth and say something. And if you have to be ornery, you know, I mean, there's a limit to what I like. But you're not going to be as ornery as you want. But, I mean, don't conform. Don't conform, because we don't get our best product when everybody is looking around trying to conform to everybody, okay? And if you want some really fascinating research, Google the ASH experiment. So here's the thing. What inspires you? You've had, like, a lot of information. You've got a lot of information. You fill out your checklist and everything. There's committees that you can work on. Lawrence, you want to pass out committees? We've got complaints. Where the complaints come in, and you have to kind of think with that. That's interesting to me. Legislation on new laws that we need to put together. Internal operations. Internal things. There's descriptions of all this on your sheet. Open government and transparency. Now, here's your task between now and, like, say, another week or two. Look at this and see what areas inspire you. Send an email to me and say, I am dying to be on the Open Government and Transparency Committee or whatever. Whatever you're interested in, let me know, like, your top one or two, like, rank them, number one, number two. And if you have any other ideas, like, I can't believe you don't have a committee on such and such. You should have a committee on this. Let me know that, you know, and let's put this together so that we can all start working as a group. Now, purpose, I want to just finish with, I said in the beginning, we talked about purpose in our hearts for doing this. I put this up, this is just what I thought of today, but it's really good. Sometimes we meet on strategic planning for the group and we kind of talk about group purpose. Just because I put this up here doesn't mean it has to be your purpose, but you have to have one. You have to have a reason on why you're here other than killing time, because it's a lot of effort to get down here and go to these meetings. So we have to pick one or two killer projects for the year and get them done. And really, like, show the community that we actually have a functioning commission here that does something for the people. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can do that. We have done that in the past. Every year, there's some good project. So I put to be an independent voice for citizens in dealing with all ethics and corruption-related issues for the city, to train our city officials and employees using the latest research on what they need to know, and to make sure ethics laws are comprehensive, fair, understandable, and enforced. I mean, so that's kind of like a start. You see, I have a 50-year plan here, so I'll just finish with this, that we met, just our four people in our office, and we were going to work on a strategic plan, and they said, okay, is it for like 2019, 20? Maybe we should do it for 5 years, Andrea says. And I said, no, let's do it for 50. Let's do it for 50. And I was like, oh, no, 50-year plan. But I wanted the vision of, like, in 50 years, will this ethics commission be here? Will we have any value to the citizens here? I won't be here. I told Andrea, you
know, no, I'm not going to be. I don't think I'll be here at 95.
Okay. Well, Andrea said she'll be 80. And so she'll still be a sort of way, we don't do anything. I want it to be a more powerful force 50 years from now. And that means you guys have the opportunity to have like 2-3 year terms, 6 years. You're taking it 6 years into the future, then you have to pass that torch. You have to make sure that what we're doing is relevant, because there will always be corruption and people trying to misutilize government. It's been around for thousands of years. It's not likely to vanish in 5 years. We're going to have extreme pressure on our form of government. There's a paper, I'll send it out if you ever have like a few hours to get it. It's Institutional Corruption and the Demise of Our Form of Government that one of the fellows at Harvard did. And it was penetrating to me. It was like, we always assume we're going to have our form of government. Oh, we're going to have like government that goes on. We cannot assume that. We cannot assume that we're going to have types of systems we have in place now, and one of the reasons that it's being eroded is because of institutional corruption. And so this paper, did I ever send it to you, George?
Don't think so.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. George would like just rip through it, and like I was defining all these words and trying to, he's a political scientist, and the theme of it is, and I totally believed it by reading the paper, is that in another 15, 20 years, our form of government will be substantially changed and not for the better, because of corruption. And so this commission, in 50 years, I would like to think that they did something to affect that in time. So would you take that message, Andrea, like when you're 80 years old, like I said, I want to look back 50 years now, and I want to say that this commission, along with our office, actually made some kind of difference in that. Okay, so I don't know how it's going to work out, but I leave it in your hands, at least for the next 6 years. That's your training on general things. I'll continue with little snippets. Anything anybody wants to talk about? Any questions? Now, you know you can call me at any time. You've got my cell phone number?
We do.
502-2254. You can call me anytime. Text me anytime. If you've got something on your mind, or all of a sudden you get inspired to create something, or you've got an issue you want to like push through, let me know, call me anytime. And if I can't help you, Kirby and Cherry, will jump in. And, we're a team, and Andrea and Lourdes, we want to have your group in the next 6 years be the most successful one we've had. Mm-hmm. So good luck. We'll do more training. And thank you for being here for an hour and a half.
Thank you. That was a great presentation. So I get to adjourn the meeting? I will. But first I want to say thank you to whoever provided the water and the cookies. The cookies were delicious. Kirby, thank you. And it was nice to meet all of you. Thank you. So our meeting is adjourned. Yay.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Good.